Comics Coffee Metal Podcast, episode 114.
Greetings and welcome to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. I am your host, Don Cardenas, and I hope you've been having a fantastic week. Well, here we are once again. It is time for me to start shilling on Kickstarter. Steve Bryant and I, we have officially launched Evie and the Helsings, issue number 2. It is live right now, as of recording right now. You know what? Let's do a live update. It launched today, at 2:15 p.m. today. It is 11:15 right now. And we are currently at 78% funded. That's fucking bananas. That's amazing. I am completely floored by this. I'm really excited because it tells me that people read issue 1 and they want another one. And that's really, really, really invigorating to see. I don't know how far this campaign is going to go. I don't know if we'll reach the same heights we did with the first one, but we're off on a pretty killer start. The tiers are very much similar to the first campaign. Bunch of variant covers, box sets. If you missed the box set last time, we're offering it again. And this time you can get an additional add-on of all the other variant covers thrown into that box set as well. And we also have a couple other fun tiers we didn't have last time. One is the Draw Me In tier, where I will draw you in as a cameo. We have one of those left. So I don't know if it'll still be up by the time this posts, but you know, if it is, go check it out. And also, we're going to have 2 separate original art tiers. Now, these are going to be very limited because I've only done 2 pieces of traditional art for the book. The first one is page 5 of the second issue. It is a splash page of Evie killing a vampire. It was a lot of fun to draw. And it was, again, inked traditionally, pencil traditionally. It's the only piece of original art that is part of the interior of the book. The second one is, and I don't know if we've announced this yet, but I'm going to say it here. So whenever this post, if it's not announced yet, you're getting it exclusive. We had an amazing response to the metal foil cover from the last issue that Steve did. So it's my turn. Now it's my turn to do a metal foil cover. And in wanting to kind of keep the vibe of metal going and really kind of bring in some I guess emotional resonance to myself for it, I have asked the co-owner and buddy and one of the main people, you know, whose work with their comic shop and the things they do and their support has got me to where I am today, Patrick Brower from Challengers Comics and Conversation. He is an experienced inker. Granted, it's not what he does anymore, but I've asked him to dust off the old inking tools and to ink this cover for me. So I traditionally penciled the cover. He's going to ink it up, and we'll have Jason Millay, our Evie and the Helsings colorist, color it up real good, and that's going to be really, really fun. I love Patrick. He's an amazing guy. He's a great inker. He's just found his passion in selling comics. But I can't wait to see what he does with it. It's going to be really fun to have, you know, part of that history I have with Challengers and all that, and how they really inspired me to get back into comics and drawing and all that, have that be part of this book. I'm really, really psyched for that. So that'll be dropping soon, and the original art for that will be part of the campaign. Really look forward to someone snagging that up. And if no one does, I wouldn't mind proudly displaying it in my home as well, but you know, I'd rather it go home to to a fan and help support the campaign, but we'll see how that goes. But yeah, enough about that. Go to evieandthehelsings.com. Really excited about the campaign. It's doing awesome. If you are a listener and you've already backed, thank you so much. If you haven't backed, go check it out. And let's get on to a couple recommendations. All right, first up, we're going to do a music recommendation, and this one is not a new album. It's less than a year old, so it's new-ish. And this was recommended to me by a former guest, awesome writer, and all-around great person, Mark Bouchard. They stopped by the Challengers Comics signing we had for Evie and the Helsings number 1, I had a great time chatting with them and just meeting their dog Juicebox, who's an adorable little fluff of curls. But yeah, Mark always has like killer music recommendations, and they did not disappoint this time, that's for sure. Mark told me about the band Mind Force with their album New Lords, and I kind of mentioned I was coming off of like a thrash kick or whatever, and they mentioned this is kind of like a thrash hardcore kind of crossover thing, so I'm like, okay, I'll check it out. And man, this thing's fucking good. It's 17 minutes, first of all. 10 tracks, 17 minutes. Like, it is intense, but it is so catchy. It is so, like, normally when I think hardcore, I really don't think of just, like, catchy or bouncy riffs or really melodic kind of guitar playing or anything, but this has got it all. And it's got the great shouty hardcore-type vocals. Like, it's hardcore is really something that I'm kind of warming up to a lot more and more, but this was just a really, really awesome album, and I'm so glad Mark recommended it. It's been a lot of fun to listen to. And again, it's only 17 minutes, so it's like, and it goes by so fast, but it doesn't feel short. It's really, really, really great. The tracks New Lord, Survival with Vengeance, Words Fail, 13 and Mean, like, it's hard to pick, like, a favorite track off of this because they're all so short and good. They get to the point and they get out, and yeah, it's been a really fun workout album as well because it kicks you in the pants. It gets you going. So yeah, definitely check it out. If you're in a thrashy mood, you want a little bit of that like more aggressive hardcore kind of vibe, but you know, still want some groovy, catchy riffs and some really, really stellar, cool sounding production. It's got that sweet spot of sounding like it's got the 80s flavor, but it sounds good. It sounds modern, but it's got that vibe. It's got that flavor of like a Ride of the Lightning or something like that. So yeah, definitely check that out. Mind Force, New Lords. All right, next up, I have a coffee recommendation. And I mentioned this a little bit in the interview I have with our guest later, but definitely go check out Three Legged Brewing and their cold brew pack. A couple weeks ago, my wife and I were at a farmer's market, a local farmer's market, and they had a booth there. And we're like, okay, let's check it out. They give us a little sample, and we're like, yes, this is amazing. So I bought a bag of their cold brew pack because it's cold brew is something I'm still kind of toying with and getting used to. And you know, the nice person at the booth, she told me that you know they formulated it, they packaged it. It's in these little prepackaged pouches. So if you have a 12-ounce mason jar, you toss it in there, you fill it up with water, and you let it sit, and you know, steep for, you know, 12 to 18 hours or something like that. And you know, being an elder millennial, of course we have mason jars, we have plenty of mason jars. So yeah, we did it, and oof, it is definitely you see, I thought I had like a caffeine tolerance and all that, and I'm sorry if I mention this again in the interview later, but man, this thing, I drank my cold brew a little too late in the day, and I did not get to sleep at any point when I wanted to that night. It was definitely a kick in the seat with the caffeine there, but it was really good. It was a very bright, not citrusy, but just like a very, just like bright, bold flavor to it. It was very smooth though, as cold brews tend to be. I just added little bit of sugar and half and half to it, and it was perfect. I definitely knew it was strong when I was drinking it, but I didn't realize how strong it was gonna be. So but yeah, I definitely recommend it. Three-Legged Brewing, their cold brew pack, it's A+ stuff, man. I've had a couple more since, and yeah, it's just maintaining that quality. So I can't wait to get another pack and do some more damage to my sleep schedule as soon as possible. All right, for comic book recommendations this week, I don't really have one. I meant to do a whole bunch of reading during my week off to get some comic recommendations down, catch up on a lot of things, and we just ended up doing so many things with our kids that we were just done at the end of the day. But the thing I can recommend to you all, and I don't know if it really needs my recommendation, but me being a lifelong Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan, I highly recommend you go check out the new movie, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. It is a really, really fun retelling the story. I've lived long enough to where I've seen several iterations of Turtles. I've seen all the iterations. My first was the animated series, but shortly thereafter, I did see reprints of the original comics, and then, you know, the movies and the other animated series. I've been through quite a few iterations, and Turtles is something I love dearly, but I can also define if a certain iteration isn't for me. And, you know, my daughter seemed interested in going to the movie, so I'm like, okay, let's go on a daddy-daughter date. Let's go check out the movie. And she loved it. I loved it. I loved how much she loved it. Amazing time. Very, very... I may have gotten a little verklempt at times with seeing how much she was enjoying it, considering how much Turtles meant to me when I was a kid, and, you know, some of the difficult things, you know, having that forward to and all that, that helped me get through some really rough spots in my childhood. So yeah, just being able to share that with her was amazing. But I really, really did enjoy this iteration. The choice to have teenagers actually voice the Turtles, perfect. Those boys made some really good Turtles, and I'm really glad that they're going to be my daughter's generation of Turtles. They really nailed it. I liked a lot of the humor in it. It was funny and silly. But I am not some, you know, mouth-breathing... Why am I a bit of a mouth-breathe, if you can't tell by this podcast? But I'm not some, you know, upset, bitter old man that, you know, is angry at changes made to the April design. I thought it was fine. It was a very cute character. I liked the relationship she had with the Turtles. I liked her backstory. It was really funny, but also kind of relatable, you know? I liked the introduction of all the other mutants and stuff like that. I really loved Paul Rudd as Mondo Gecko. Ray Fillet. I'm not going to say anything about Ray Fillet, but it's been in my... Ray Fillet has been in my mind for quite a bit afterwards. Yeah, it's just really fun. I loved Jackie Chan's Splinter. It was a very different take on Splinter, but I did appreciate when Splinter did have a fight scene. They made it like a Jackie Chan fight scene, and that was really fun to see. I don't want to spoil it too much for anyone who hasn't seen it, but it's just a really fun movie. Like, if changes to the Turtles lore or things like that are something that are going to upset you, then yeah, you're not going to be a fan of this. But if you're someone who's like, yeah, let's see what they do now, I think you're going to have a really good time. The art style of the animation was just beautiful. I loved it. It was gritty, yet somehow just really slick and stylish, but it gave you that dirty New York, but not too much to where, you know, it felt like it was like grim and gritty or anything like that. It was just really fun. It was really great. And go check it out. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. I give it four cowabungas and two shells of a time. Yeah, let's go with that. All right, it is now time for my guests. Today I have three amazing guests. And if the last time I had three guests on at any point has any indication that it's certainly going to be a really, really fun time, especially with two of my guests being returning guests. So, you know, without further ado, I'm very pleased to welcome back to the show Fellhound, Michelle Abinader, and for the first time, Natasha. I'm sorry, I should ask beforehand, do you have a preferred pronunciation of the last name?
Alterisi.
Alterisi. Natasha Alterisi. Thank you all for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Now, this is Michelle's...
I love being on
your show. Yeah, Michelle, I think this is your 58th time.
Yeah, I think so. 58th or 59th, I think.
Something like that.
One of those.
You are, you know, you are easily, officially the most returned guest.
I mean, like, I don't know whether to, like, apologize or say you're welcome. I'm honestly not sure.
I'm appreciative of it. You're always welcome on the show. We were kind of talking before, a couple weeks ago before recording, that it's been too long. The podcast has been Michelle-less for far too long. But yeah, I'm glad to have all of you on. Natasha, I've, you know, been wanting to have a chat with you on the show for a long time. I'm really glad we get to do it with the shadow of the immense success your Kickstarter is currently having, And hopefully it continues on to have even greater success, because you've announced a few really awesome stretch goals that are going on. But we'll get all into the details of Sapphic Pulp and its origins and all that fun stuff with that. But Michelle, Natasha, Fel, I got to ask. It's the main thing of the show. Comics, coffee, metal. What are y'all digging right now? We can start with Fel. You don't have to like go super in depth. I understand. You know,
I sadly don't listen to a lot of metal, but I can talk about some music. As everyone knows, I am obsessed with Symphony of the Witch and Mercury, and the soundtrack for it dropped like a week ago, so I've been listening to that on repeat.
Oh, that's something.
The soundtracks are always great to listen to. It's definitely the I'm certainly not one to be picky about music. I pretty much have listened to everything, especially some things that you all sent me that I can't wait to talk about. But Natasha, what have you been listening to lately?
Well, Mitski just released a new song for the first time in years, so I've been a little obsessed with it. I think I listened to it for like 2 hours the day it dropped, like last week or whatever. Yeah, other than that, I've actually been trying to get into some metal, because I have a secret project that requires a little bit of a darker tone, and I was hoping to build a playlist, so I'll take some recommendation.
Oh, nice. That's one of my favorite things to do, is just recommend things for folks. Michelle, how about you? What have you been listening to?
I don't think we need to talk about what I've been listening to. I don't really think that's necessary.
scandalous.
Well, now we really have to talk about what you've been listening to.
No, I've just been spending a lot of time listening to Phoebe Bridgers, and I unfortunately really got back into Folklore, Taylor Swift's album, and just like giving myself mental illness. So, we really don't need to talk about it. It's like not super necessary. I'm not proud of it or like really happy about it in any way. I actually like wish I listened to less of what I listen to, and have been just like doing a lot of noise canceling headphones with nothing happening. I'm doing that a little bit. It's been nice.
Well, you know, you're obviously allowed to feel how you feel about it, but I stand firm that there should be no guilty pleasures or anything like that. If something,
oh no, I don't. I'm
you,
just
it should definitely be.
It's more of just like I need to stop being a sad boy and enter society as a productive human being.
Oh well, I can definitely emphasize with that.
a little bit of that would be really cool, and you know, as always, like some BTS, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good time.
So I'm just like, you know, feeling sad and then like sprinkling in a little bit of K-pop here and there.
Awesome. Natasha, so that Mitski song, was that the one you recommended to me?
Yeah, the Bug Like an Angel.
That is, you know, I told you I certainly have an opinion on that, and I had to stop myself from listening to that song on repeat.
It gets that, you.
It's like it's 100% like early 90s alternative like vibes, like totally like Mazzy Star type stuff, like just, and I'm like, okay, I have to like explore this artist a whole lot more now, because it's like, you know, I'd love to talk about metal and stuff, but I have my sad boy times.
Well, if you need some sad girl rock, Mitski's got you covered.
It definitely sounds that way. No, that was a really fantastic track. Was Bug Like an Angel. That was just like the vibes on it were just like impeccable. As soon as it started, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna dig this a lot. 100%. And then Fel, you sent a few recommendations my way earlier.
Completely different. The last one was a neat addition.
I can say that, you know, Where's My Jewel was something I fully connected to. Full tech. But
I love that song.
It's time.
I can appreciate the what I hope is satire or humor behind it. I mean, I'm an elder millennial or whatever you want to call us now. So, you know, I definitely, you know, in my music history, there's like, you know, good sounding music that has a lot of tongue in cheek and stuff into it. So I can definitely appreciate that there. The other thing you recommended from Girl in Red, that was fantastic. That was a really good song.
Oh, I love Girl in Red. I saw her in concert at a music festival, and it was just a life-changing experience. Being sad in the audience. Gay in the audience.
I felt like I needed to wait till October to listen to that. Like, that song is definitely something you need to listen to when there's like, you know, wet leaves on the ground and you're just like kind of bummed out. And
yeah, fall song ready to start. It's very nice, very, really, I don't know, melodic.
Mm-hmm. And then Michelle, you sent me Hanabi. Pardon me, I have to go.
Oh,
now.
Oh yeah.
And that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, they're great. My friend's 3-year-old, that's her favorite band. And I was hanging out with them a couple weeks ago, and she was, you know, saying nonsense and gesturing at the TV. And my friends were like, oh, she wants to watch the music videos of this band she's really into right now. And I don't know what I was expecting, but it definitely was not that. And, you know.
I wish my kids were into like bands. Right now, it's we just got off our Super Mario themes kick, and now they're both just like nonstop that Gummy Bear song from like whenever in the 2000s or whatever. I don't even know if you are. Yeah, it's rough over here. But that was a lot of fun. Michelle, I remember the last. If I had fully come around to baby metal yet, but obviously
you were just getting into it, yeah. At the time,
the comparisons are definitely there, and I think had I listened to this a year ago, I would have been like, "Yeah, thanks." But now I'm like, "Okay, I can dig on this." Like, if this randomly, you know, now that this is in my music library, if it randomly pops up, I'm not going to be upset.
Right. I remembered that you were, I'm not going to say like really into baby metal, but I remember that you had like a vague interest peripherally. Yeah, so that's why I made the recommendation.
Yeah. I think the instrumentation was really drawing me in a lot. So like the, you know, just not being familiar with that style of, you know, influences and stuff like that. It took me a while to like just get accustomed to it and all that. But now, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
100%. So I am curious to see what, if you guys had a chance to listen to those recommendations I sent you, and if you had any thoughts on that.
Oh, yeah. We watched all the videos.
Okay, I'll call them out first. First, which is probably one of my favorite bands of the past few years, is Spiritbox. I was curious what you guys thought of Rotoscope.
I liked that one. I think that was my favorite.
Yeah,
that probably was like my second favorite, I think, of the three. I liked it.
I like the visuals of the music video. Yeah, the haunted wood.
Yeah, it's definitely, that song's definitely more a slight shift to what they normally do. Normally, it's more of a modern metal thing with you know, her clean melodic singing and stuff. This one really kind of like up the. It gave me a lot of like Garbage vibes.
Yeah, but I was feeling that a little bit too, honestly.
So they're kind of continuing to kind of go in this direction, but they're still, I'm curious to see what their next album does, but it's definitely one of those bands where I'm like, if someone's kind of like flirting with the idea of metal, I know they like some synth stuff or melodic stuff. I'm like, I definitely talk about Spirit Box a lot. Sure. Well, I guess next one up is, definitely metal, Arch Enemy, Handshake with Hell.
It was, for me, like a little, I'm not hugely into metal always. Mm-hmm. So it was a little, I liked it, but it's probably not something that I would like normally gravitate towards. I liked we liked the little, Fel and I like watched these videos together earlier. We liked the little like vibe change when like, you know, she was like, you know, being an angel in heaven at that one little point in the video where I was like, oh, what has happened? Is this the same song? What's going on? And it was a nice little vibe change. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Arch Enemy is definitely, it's definitely just metal. And I knew that one would probably be the hardest one to like, probably go over with everybody just because it is, you know, so firmly in that. And I'm just really impressed with any singer who can do amazing clean singing and then just like growl like a beast and do both really well. That's like, that's just like, I don't, these people aren't human. And I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I'm really drawn to women harsh vocalists just because it just feels more justified to be that angry, you know, with male vocalists, it's very hard to find ones that aren't just doing the low growl thing because they can, and it's what they're supposed to do. It doesn't feel like there's any like real raw emotion behind it. And with female vocalists, it tends to come across more that way. Now that's just my opinion and my experience with it. But yeah, so that's why I'm tend to drawn to more of those types of bands and stuff like that. I was going to send you a band named Crypta, which is basically, you know, an all-female death metal band. But I felt like that one was probably going to be a little bit too far.
We're easing into metal.
I'm trying to convert people to metal, so I can't like just go full blast and I'm gonna drive everybody away. But
I liked your statement. You were like, I'm really into women vocalists. I think I appreciate on theme. Thank you.
Well, you know, I was joking with my wife, I'm like, oh, I got, you know, three guests, and you know, she's like, oh, she's like, you guys gonna have a lot in common. I'm like, I think so. I think we have. It's a mutual interest. Lots of mutual interest. And so the next one is a more recent band I discovered who have a really, you know, fervent following, and that's Anchor. That one was, I see them like mention like Paramore metal, essentially. Is that what you thought? Because I was at first I was like, well, that's kind of simplifying everything, and then I listened to it again. I'm like, no, that's accurate.
yeah, no, it's very accurate. That's like exactly where we were at with it. but in a good way.
Because I really like. I wasn't a fan of Paramore before the After Laughter thing album. They weren't really, you know, in my wheelhouse or whatever. But after that, like After Laughter, I was like, oh yes, I am totally into this. So I haven't made the plunge back into their catalog to see if I've been, because that happens a lot with me.
I am the opposite. I like their first three albums and then pretty much nothing else from them.
I have a history of like finding a band at the point where they're changing their sound a bit and then falling in love with them there and then finally going back and enjoying all of it. That happened to me with Metallica, that happened to me with Gojira, that happened to me with I guess Paramore.
Well, you know, a friend said something kind of like interesting to me recently, just like sometimes when you listen to an album you don't really like it, like as your life changes and you become like kind of different, like might feel differently about an album that you didn't like before. So it's always kind of interesting to like let a few years go by and then maybe try again.
Yeah, 1,000%, and it's gone both ways. There's been plenty of albums I listened to heavily in my early 20s and all that, and I will go back now and I'm like, why? why do I have all these?
I'm sure we all have those.
For sure.
And then, you know, as you get older, you look back at some of the music that maybe you shrugged off because it might have been cheesy or whatever, and you're like, no, actually, it's really good. I should really go back and listen to this again. For me, it's a lot of nu metal because, you know, that's my my age generation's cross to bear. But, well, you know, thank you all for indulging me and trying out some. Hopefully, I've nudged you all somewhat more into enjoying some metal. I'm always happy to give recommendations. Natasha, like, if you're looking for certain vibes or whatever, just let me know, and I will. That's the things I love about metal. It's more of a medium than a genre. Like, because there's this, you know, I've talked to people where like, yeah, I love metal, and they're talking about like blackened Swedish death metal made by a guy in a shed in the woods. That sounds like, you know, a fan run through a car exhaust recording. And then, you know, I talked to somebody else, and they're talking about like, you know, Linkin Park or some other band that spends millions of dollars making their albums in studios and stuff like that, and completely different sounds. So, but that's what I love about it. It's the same reason I love Kicks, because there's so many wide varying things you can do with both of them. And I think if anything made into a comic, I think, is better, and anything made into metal is better, to be honest. But that's just me. And on the topic of comics, what have you all been enjoying? We'll start again with Fel.
Well, honestly, I've just been really obsessed with like a lot of web manga lately. I keep talking about this one called Cheat Comic, aka My Dear Last. It's like this really cute, like Chinese web manga about like this, like a peach farmer and a baker, and they fall in love in a small town. It's really cute, it's really queer, it's really angsty somewhat, but the art is so good. I'm obsessed with it. I made everybody else also get into it because I could not shut up about it.
It's beautiful. It's so good.
And I feel like that comic, like, we can revisit this later when we're talking about Sapphic Pulp, but like that, I feel like played a small part in like Natasha and I becoming, you know, friends, collaborators, people that work together, because we were talking about the Peach comic. So yeah. This comic has changed lives.
Wonderful comic.
It's a miracle.
In a larger way than I think we give it credit for at this point. So,
once again, I'm in the position where I'm like, I need to start reading manga.
We'll send it to you. You're gonna get the link at least 17 times before the end of this episode recording, probably, and then I'll send it again tomorrow, and it'll be.
With the way my brain works, that will be the best way to do anything. Really, is to make it impossible for me to get about or click off, because yeah, I'm terrible with just the. Permanence of things and time blindness. It's just getting worse as I get older. So yeah, please hammer it away. Happy to check it out. How about you, Natasha? What have you been enjoying?
I mean, I'm also really into the Peach comic, obviously, but I'll pick a different one. There's another web comic right now coming out called Show Me Your Bust, which is the funniest. Excellent title, first of all. It's also just like incredibly funny about these, you know, two college friends that like end up drunkenly, like, not really hooking up, but just sort of experimenting with each other, and like the one is like very obviously gay and the other one doesn't quite know that she's gay, and there's all these weird dynamics between them, and it's just so funny. It's the funniest smut comic I've ever read. I love it.
How about you, Michelle? Or are you going to tell me it's the Peach comic?
I mean, I feel like I had like a serious thing that I started reading, and I was going to talk about that. But like, should I be talking about like a silly web comic? Like, is that what we're doing today?
I want to hear about your serious one.
There's some whiplash. Well, like, let's go.
I mean, I I've been doing a lot of like, you know, it's the summer, so I'm doing a lot of like, you know, sitting by, you know, a body of water and like, you know, looking out into the wilderness and like reading, because, you know, I'm gay. That's what, you know, gay women do. Pine by a body of water. But I read Crashing from IDW by Matthew Klein and Morgan Beam. It's really good. I don't know if you've dipped into that yet. It's out in trade right now, but it's about like a, I don't want to like say too much, but it's like about like a doctor who like works on people that have like superpowers essentially. And it's sort of like, it kind of like dips into like, I guess what could be like the darker side of superpowered individuals. I don't know. It's really good and interesting.
That's cool.
So if you're looking for something cool, it's been a really cool read. And then, also Buzzing, which is a new like OGN out, art by everyone's fave, Rai Hickman.
Oh yeah.
I love Hickman. And Samuel Satin, wrote it, but, Hickman, I swear to God, there's like seven of them. Like I feel like every 30 seconds, there's like new OGN out illustrated by Rai Hickman. I'm like, what's happening?
There are robots.
How many arms do you have? How many of you are there? And I've asked before and I get very normal answers. Like, I'm very good at managing my time. And I'm like, that doesn't exist.
Time management.
It doesn't make any sense.
Well, when we talked about this project, actually, like Rai was one of the first ones to get back to me, and they were like, I was trying to like talk scheduling stuff. I was like, we're thinking, you know, we'd kickstart in the summer and then you guys could work on it in the fall. And they were like, yeah, don't worry about the deadline. I'll just like take 2 weeks off of my other project and get it done. And I was just like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
It's like some kind of superhuman ability to manage time. I feel like they should teach classes to comic artists. How to do a schedule and manage time.
And you know, Rai's art is just there's no shortcuts. There's no the work is all there on the page, and it's so yeah. It's just someone you just get angry at. It's just one of those people. It's one of those artists that you're just like, you can't be like jealous of, because it's they exist on another plane. So it's like screaming at the wind. Why? it serves no purpose. Just enjoy the breeze. I am definitely behind on reading a lot of things. I've been trying to read a lot more. And it definitely OGNs and stuff like that. And Crashing looks really, really great. So I'm going to add that to my list. I'm going to be going to the I'm going to be signing at a comic shop on Saturday. So I'd be shocked if they did not have it there. If Challengers didn't
have it. Yeah, it just came out like a couple weeks ago in trade. So they will most likely have it.
Yeah,
because it's newer. So
yeah, I try to like read comics to recommend for the podcast and all that, but more often than not, it's, you know, friends and peers sending me like, yeah, I got this coming out, I'm gonna check it out, blah, blah, blah. So I'm reading stuff. It's just like, I tend to like read the first and second issues of things, really love it. And then since I'm not going to a shop regularly or anything like that, and Comixology died, I can't easily like just follow up on it afterwards. And I know if I ask my friends like, hey, can you send me the rest of those PDFs, you know, or whatever, they would, but I don't want to do that. I want to monetarily support them.
Right.
So it just becomes like, I have all these series that I really, really enjoyed the first couple issues of, and I need to get back to it. And it just keeps piling and piling on top of books I've been meaning to read. Like, I finally read The Last Ronin from the Ninja Turtle. And, you know, I'm a huge Ninja Turtles fan. It's one of the milestones of my life. And to finally sit down and read that book, how long it took me to get to even get it is like ridiculous. And, you know, I still have like the last couple of volumes of Paper Girls to read through. And I've been, you know, that's how far back I'm just a mess.
Quite a backlog.
Things. So, but yeah, I definitely need to get off my duff and start reading more. So hopefully with my kids going into school, back into school next week, I can get more work done during the day. So I can actually like log off some time at night to read before I go to sleep, before I pass out. So awesome. Well, now let's get to, what hopefully is, a universally loved topic, and that is coffee. Once again, we'll start with Belle. I forget. Are you a coffee drinker?
So I can't drink coffee just for some reason. The caffeine gives me mad anxiety. But I really like tea. I have green tea every day. I find it very relaxing. And it's decaffeinated green tea because, again, I'm small and cannot handle my caffeine.
Well, I thought I had a high caffeine tolerance, and I tried a cold brew recently that we got from a farmer's market, and I slept like 90 minutes that night. Like, because I had it like 5 o'clock. I'm the type of person, I can have a cup of coffee like at 10 o'clock at night, and I'm still go to bed, you know, when I want to go to bed. But yeah, I totally misjudged how strong cold brews can get. So I feel there, and sorry I didn't remember off the top of my head, but now I remember now you like tea, which, you know, I'm a tea fan as well. Decaf green tea. I haven't tried decaf green tea. I probably should. I should probably incorporate more decaf things into my life, but maybe, I don't know, maybe when my doctor forces me. that's probably what's going to happen when my doctor's like, listen, man, you got to stop.
You got to lay off the bean.
yeah. You got to cool it, man. How about you, Natasha?
Well, I used to be like a daily coffee drinker. I used to have it like probably like 4 or 5 cups a day. I was going nuts, but I was getting such like terrible heartburn that I had to like stop. And I switched to tea probably like a year ago now. And I do like a single cup of like Earl Grey in the morning, and it's like good for the rest of the day. And I have similar like reaction to the caffeine fell. Like I get a little bit like anxious. And so that also doesn't help, but like the tea is a little, it's like way less strong as long as I don't like leave the bag in the water too long or whatever, make it way too strong.
Now the Star Trek nerd in me is wondering, when you make your tea, do you just say Earl Grey hot, make the replicator sound like Picard order? Or is that just me?
I haven't seen very much Star Trek, so I don't know. Sure, yeah, that's what I do.
Just humor me here for a minute.
sure.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm thinking about it now. I'm like, I'm not sure that the caffeine doesn't give me anxiety. I'm just not sure yet. I'm sorry it gives you a heartburn. I've had to face a similar experience with spicy foods now, and it's really heartbreaking because I love spicy foods, and yeah, it was like the one thing, like I would have rather I had to give up or limit my caffeine intake or my coffee intake than have to like make sure I have, you know, some Zantac on me if I'm gonna go have something spicy. Like,
yeah,
it's woe is me. The saddest boy can't have spicy foods. How about you, Michelle? Are you still drinking up all the Utica coffee, or?
Yeah, I do still buy Utica coffee. I also have a coffee shop where I live now that roasts their own beans, and I buy coffee beans from them sometimes. And my friends recently opened a restaurant, and I help out there sometimes, and they cold brew Café du Monde coffee from like New Orleans. And that is like absolute jet fuel. And I just drink it black. So I just chug black cold brew in the mornings. And I don't sleep very much. So like I need it. But yeah, coffee. I drink a lot of coffee. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's, jet fuel sounds pretty interesting.
it just really gets you. It spikes my heart rate, I'll tell you that much.
I've been looking for a few more. I was actually getting ready to order some more Utica coffee because you had
it's so good, that like a Freight House and Yeah. I really like the pumpkin. I think their pumpkin is out. They do a really good, great pumpkin. If you like a pumpkin coffee.
I do not like flavored coffees, but my wife does. So I'm sure she will, like trying out the pumpkin.
It's good. So
she hasn't said as much, but I know she kind of avoids ordering like the pumpkin stuff because just, you know, her own like personal, like, rebelling against the framing of it being a basic,
right?
The basic thing.
I understand. Yeah. I understand.
Because you had so generously gifted us a bag of the Freight House, and I've been like, I need to get back to some Utica coffee because I found some.
It's so good.
I found some local roasters that I really, really enjoyed, but I'm like, okay, well, you know, with the Rootless that we always drink, you know, we have it set up so like. We get a gigantic bag, a 5-pound bag, and that lasts us like 6 weeks. And then the 2 weeks in between when they send the next one, that's when I'll get some other coffees to kind of experiment and all that. So,
yeah.
Or return to some old favorites. And Utica has definitely been on there.
If you're looking for other recommendations from Utica Coffee, I've had pretty much all of them, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I know you mentioned the cold brew, and that piqued my interest as well.
Yeah, they have. Utica Coffee they sell these cold brew packs that are really convenient because they're in like a filter bag already. So you just get the box of cold brew packs and you just take one of them out and like chuck it in whatever they tell you how much water to put it in. And you just leave it in the fridge for 24 hours and pull out the filter bag and you're done.
Yeah. Yeah. We had that with
so easy.
That's just like the cold brew we got from the three-legged brewers was the name. They're at a local farmer's market. They had a little booth set up and they gave us a little taster of their cold brew. And I'm like, yep, let's do this.
Yep.
And it's so easy. And they're like, oh, if you have a 12-ounce mason jar, and I'm like, we're 40 years old. Of course we have mason jars. Like I have more mason jars than I even know what to do with. Like, you know. I keep threatening online to make a bunch of salsa and bring it to my friends at a con because I have so many damn mason jars lying around. No,
you did threaten that at C2E2, and I didn't think I saw any salsa. I'll just say that
salsa. I did signing up.
Well, I didn't have enough time to get my recipe to where I wanted it, and then therefore to bulk make it. But I think I got it now. So I'm definitely shooting for some buds are listening to this, including you. In C2E2 next year, then high likelihood that's happening. You know, I'll just be going through clinking up bottles, going through the security. It's my ink. Don't worry about it, guys.
Don't worry about it.
Well, I had a friend who he started a bakery out of his house. He made amazing bread, and he brought loaves for people to C2E2, and they were like threatening to kick him out because he's in like carrying bags of loaves of like it's like, oh, these are just gifts for my friends or whatever, and they're like he had to do that like for 3 days in a row. So after the first day he was just like sneaking them in, like leaving and coming back like multiple times from his hotel room
bread to bring in the...
and I appreciate, and Jerry McDade, I appreciate you. I miss Blue Harvest Bakery. It was amazing bread. My waistline doesn't miss you, but my heart does. He made the best sourdough bread I've ever had. I'm sorry, I'm a bread fan too.
Yeah. No, it's all good. I love bread.
Bread's amazing. But yeah, Michelle or anyone else listening who's interested in some cold brews, Three-Legged Brewing, their cold brew is really good. But yeah, I'm definitely gonna check out the Utica Coffee one as well. I'm looking at the Great Pumpkin thing here. I'm like, I probably need to get that.
It's good. I'm always very excited when it comes out every year, and I get a bag or two, and it's great.
I have no reason not to trust your judgment on this.
I love coffee, so I never would.
All right,
I'm gonna check out the Three-Legged Brewing too.
They also seem like they're really nice people, so I'm always happy to do that.
Wow, even better.
People seem to be nice. All right. Well, thank you all for humoring the main questions for the show. Now let's get to the real reason you're here, and that's to talk about your amazing Kickstarter, Sapphic Pulp, which as of right now has 8 days to go, but by the time this posts, there'll be just a couple of days left. You have over 1,000 backers. You have blown through your original goal by over $10,000. And it seems like it's still going strong. And you have some amazing stretch goals up in line for that. So did you expect, or did you have an idea that it would be so well received when you were formulating this anthology?
I mean, I hoped so. I had a feeling that we would be successful. I wasn't quite sure that we would go this high with it, or that I would even, you know, just getting the team that we got together is still kind of unbelievable to me. We have such a good team. Best of the best.
So what, you know, and I'm sure you've had to go over this many times with other podcast interviews, but what was like the inkling of the idea to start putting all this together and undertaking, you know, putting just an anthology alone together, much less, you know, the topic or the subject or whatever, just deciding to do an anthology alone is a huge decision. So what was kind of like the driving force behind that?
Michelle. it was Michelle's idea to like actually like make it something, because I had just sort of been like writing these little short erotic stories just for fun, just to get some practice writing in, and sharing them with Michelle and some other friends. Phil saw some too, I think. Yeah. And like we the more talks we had about it, the more I was like, I want to do something with these, but you know, I can't draw them all. That'd be impossible. And then, you know, we kicked around the idea of an anthology, like a traditional, like do a call for entries and everything, and finally just settled on, you know, reaching out to people personally and seeing if they would be interested. Just take a shot on a really weird, weird message. Like, hey, I got a weird one. Would you like to draw it?
Well, it seems there's a lot of just really passionate people supporting the project and involved with the project. And I'm certainly that has no small part to, you know, what's contributing to the success of it and all that. So you definitely, I think, you know, got something that people were like, we need this. We need to have this kind of representation out there and this kind of thing out there for us. You know, and this isn't necessarily, you know, my usual things I read. but, you know, I think it's amazing that, you know, something like this can have such a reach and have such support to it, especially since, you know, there's so many artists and creators on this book that, you know, I know and respect and love to see them get their wins, especially you, Natasha. I know you had some, you know, wrist issues and all that. And I know for a while there's, you know, I don't know how serious it was, but, you know, from my recollection, it kind of seemed like maybe you were kind of unsure if you're going to be drawing much anymore.
Yeah.
And now it seems like you're recharged. You're ready just to, like, you know, start kicking ass again. You know, I remember, you know, Heathen was one of the first like independent comics that I read where I'm like, you know, oh shit. Like, yeah, independent comics, you know, fucking rule now. Like this is great, you know? And it was, you know, at the time you were someone like, I didn't know who you were and, you know, oh really didn't know who you were and all that. And you still had this, you know, amazing story and all that behind it. So to, you know, see your growth and your career, you know, continue to go forward. And, you know, though you've had some challenges, like you're just, you know, plowing through and getting it done and having great success. I'm very, very happy to see that. And I hope you can take some time to appreciate, you know, to take it in and feel good.
Yeah. I mean, the like first couple of days of like actually announcing the project was a little bit like, are we really doing this? And then, you know, it finally like settled in on me. I'm like, oh, we're doing this. This is great. I love this. Yeah. Like my wrist breaking was kind of like the worst thing that ever happened to me probably. And it was a long, long, painful journey to get back to where I am. I'm happy that I am able to draw again, but during the time where I couldn't, you know, I really kind of stretched my wings in the writing side of things. And it's not even until, you know, we had Ashley Woods come in and draw the final book of Heathen for me. But even after that, you know, I still hadn't done a lot of collaborating. So this was also my big dive into like doing more collaborative projects. I tend to be a little bit of a I'm going to do it all myself kind of girl, and I'm kind of glad that I'm letting go of that.
Yeah, I can totally empathize with, you know, just wanting to do it all yourself. And, you know, for me, you know, it's I love collaborating with people, and there's definitely projects and stuff where there's actually one I sent Michelle, which we don't have to talk about that or anything, but like there's an idea for a story I had that I sent Michelle that I'm like, I was just going to do it myself, but I'm like, no, I think I need to like collaborate on this one, because if I try to do everything myself, I feel like it's not going to be, more often than not, I feel like I made it greater by having other perspectives and other people work on it. And then, you know, obviously there's always projects where you're like, no, this is me. This is, I'm doing all this. And with that clumsy segue, Fel.
You know, speaking of doing everything yourself, yeah.
it's also been amazing to see your success with, you know, And We Love You and all that, and you know, we spoke when that was going on and all that, and you've recently started changing up your style a bit, your artistic style. Was that something that they both look great, you know, so but was there a conscious choice to really start shifting it that way? Or did you kind of feel like you're kind of going in that direction a bit and just kind of leaned into it?
Yeah. So everything, when I, you know, when we talked about how that Peach comic was life changing. It all goes back to the Peaches. But yeah, like I, to be honest, after And We Love You, I was a little burnt out. It was a very, I guess, difficult project to make. And I felt very creatively, I guess, like, unsure after that. And then it wasn't until I read Peach Comic, or My Dear Lass, and it was so beautiful. It was such a beautiful comic. And I was just so inspired by it. I was like, actually, this is the kind of comic that I want to make now. I want to make Peach Comic. So that's why I kind of started experimenting with my style. I wanted to make it lighter and brighter and more expressive. And yeah, I want to try and capture that feeling that Peach Comic gave me. And that's why I'm kind of pursuing this lighter, more airy, a little bit happier style. But, knowing me, the story is, they're still going to break your heart. It's just going to look brighter.
Well, that was my next question. Are you still going to like just devastate us with every, like, just, I just want to be prepared. That's all, you know, cause you know, I can't imagine why you would feel burnt out after, you know, doing all the work you did on Commander Rao and We Love You and the emotional toll those books take on the readers, much less the creator. So yeah, I can't imagine why you would, you know, but no, I'm really glad to hear that you found something that's like this is the kind of things I want to make, because I feel like as a creator, I didn't really have any of those kind of things until recently myself. And once that, and for me, it felt like such a huge, like, weight was lifted off my shoulders almost. And a different weight was placed, because now I'm like, okay, you know, well, now I know what I want, and now I have to figure out how to do it. But on the flip side, it's like, well, I know when I'm going in the right direction then. Yeah. You know, I've had that with, and I've had that with music in the past few years, and it's really invigorating. So I'm really glad to hear that from you, that that's what's going on there.
Thank you.
So Michelle, Natasha said you're the driving force. Why am I not surprised? Why am I not?
I don't know. Like, I think anybody who has followed me online in the past few years, listened to any interview I've given, is well aware of my admiration for Heathen and Natasha's work. I like had an interview that like was posted on Twitter a couple of days ago, and I think I mentioned Heathen 3 times in the course of one interview. So like this isn't news, I think. And you know, through our little Peach comic chat, again, it all comes back to the peaches, I think, in that. And
the peaches.
Honestly, one of my favorite things about making comics is kind of like, not so much like pushing people to do things, but like if I can see that somebody is excited about something and wants to make something, and I can also see like a path to that being successful and happening, like it's difficult for me to like not sort of like encourage in the direction of making that project happen, because it, to me, it seems like, well, this is the best course of action here. And with Natasha writing so many incredible stories, each one, I think I was like, this one's my favorite. And then like the next script would come and I'd be like, no, this one is my favorite. And it was just such a privilege to be able to read scripts that she's written as somebody, sorry, Natasha, that you're here and you have to listen to me say these things.
Go ahead.
But it's such a privilege to be able to read Natasha's work and to just have her be like, it would be cool to make this. And then just be like, you should make the thing. You should make it. You should make it. And I don't even remember how we got into the conversation of like me helping with it. But I assume I didn't think that you were serious for at least the first, you know, 60 to 70 times that we talked about it. I probably was like, wait, are you sure? Wait, me? Really? Oh my God. I think I even like thank you at least once a week now for letting me work on this book with you. And I really appreciate it like every single day. I really think this is, you know, absolutely the gayest book I've ever worked on. And I really do try really hard to be gayer with each project that I make. It's a goal of mine. So it's important that I continue to, you know, one up myself in that department each time. So
same thing.
I think it's a really cool thing to do, to make a collection where you're writing and you're able to bring in other artists. And especially if it's something that you're just exploring, collaborating with other people and having them draw your work, to be able to bring in people that you trust, that are your friends, people whose work you admire, because I think that it can be really fun to invite people that you respect and that you have good relationship with to, you know, help you make the thing that you want to make. And I think especially when you're dealing with this type of content, you know, the erotica type content, that you really do have to trust people, because you really don't want any kind of like bad feelings in it. And I think, I don't know, it's just a great opportunity, I think, for a bunch of friends to make something really cool together. And it's, for me personally, a great opportunity to like work with somebody whose work I admire so much. And Heathen being, you know, my first favorite comic in my adult life. And, you know, something that really has inspired me to create. Until I found the Peach comic, and that inspired me more. I'm sorry. No, I'm just kidding. I kid. But I love this book so much. It doesn't even exist yet, and I love it. And I honestly, I'm just so happy that we get to make it. So I feel really grateful.
I mean, I was just like stoked that you were just so insistent on like telling me to do it. You're just like, just do it though. Like, we can do it. Like, I've managed Kickstarters. I can help you do it. And I was like, for real? Like, honestly though? Because like I couldn't imagine, if it had been left to me, I would still just be writing scripts and I would have never like gotten up the courage to like reach out to anybody and be like, do you want to draw this weird thing that I drew or that I wrote? Like, you know, it's such a nerve wracking like conversation to be like, I have a comic for you. I can't pay you. We got to try to kickstart it somehow. And also it's a very risky subject. So, you know, a little nerve wracking from all angles.
Well, I think, that's what makes people like Michelle so important to this industry. You know, it's why, you know, so many editors are unsung heroes of things. And, though Michelle is capable of very, you know, lots of other things as well, her skill as an editor and just someone to, you know, let's do this, you know, it's very apparent. And I think it's, you know, it's going to lead to amazing things for all of you. I'm so glad that this is such a success for everybody involved, because given the subject matter and all that, but most importantly, because it is a gay book. And those, you know, your stories need to be told. They need to be out there for people who are looking for them, because there are so many other ones for heterosexual people out there that, you know, like, come on, you know, let's share the space a bit. And, it's, you know, I said this with, you know, the other anthologies Michelle edited, that, you know, it's incredibly important that these are out there. You know, I don't know what the future lies for my kids or what their lives will be like, but I want them to have, you know, I want them to be able to see themselves in whatever they are and whoever they become. And so that's why, you know, no matter what, you know, if it's something I would read myself or not, it's not important. I want that for other people, you know, because there are plenty of books out there that are just for me, you know, that are my book and not, you know, not that, but, so, and that's not to say I'm doubting the absolute quality that is involved in this book, because I know Natasha's writing. It's amazing, you know, and, all the artists involved, amazing. Natasha, it says on the Kickstarter page that you kind of tailored the stories to the artists and their interests and their things. Was there a ton of discussion with that? Or did it kind of like vary between everybody? Was like, just whatever is fine? Or
it was, you know, it kind of was like a one-on-one sort of situation. Like some of the stories I had written ahead of time, and I just found an artist who I thought would be a good fit for it. And, you know, and presented them a script, and I was like, what do you think? You know, is this something you're cool with, you're comfortable with, you're excited about? And then some of them, you know, I was reaching out to before I had enough scripts done. And so I got to have more one-on-one conversations with them. Like, what are you interested in drawing? And, you know, is there something specific you want to try? And, so I was able to kind of like work those things into the details of the script, which is kind of a fun challenge. You know, 'cause like I said, the only other time I'd really done collaborating, there's one other like short story where I was just paired with a random artist, but, For Heathen, you know, it was very set, you know, kind of actually sort of had to adjust to fit, you know, what was already existing in Heathen world. And so it was a lot more work for her, I think, than it was for me. Like, even though it was writing for the first time for somebody else, it was a very, you know, she had to come on board and, you know, figure out, we had to like nail down the style and, you know, make sure things were consistent. And, you know, it was just a matter of like how to communicate with each other. Versus these ones, it felt a little more like, I guess, like playful, you know. I always think that like short projects are a little bit more interesting, like as creative challenges, you know. I always like to do little zines and stuff for myself. And so working with a lot of different individuals on these kind of stories was even more of an interesting, like fun challenge, you know. And I think I always kind of like thrive when there's a little bit of a challenge. So I really enjoyed it. And I'm very, very excited to see what everybody comes up with.
Awesome. Awesome. So yeah, as I said before, you know, there'll be a few days left to go back this. Sapphic Pulp it's kicking ass right now. And some of the stretch goals you have coming up are really, really cool. Do you mind speaking on any of those?
Sure. I think the only stretch goal that we have listed that we haven't met yet, the $38,000 stretch goal, which is, I mean, all of our stretch goals are predominantly a creator pay increase. That is, we're taking a stand in that, you know, we want to pay creators as much as possible, and we're being really transparent about our page rates. When we hit our $33,000 stretch goal, that bumped the page rate up to $240 a page for interiors. That's where we are right now. And also gives our cover artists a better rate. So our cover art rate, which is also listed right on the Kickstarter page, $600 for the cover, a bonus for the letterer of $100 with each stretch goal. So right now we are, you know, moving quickly toward $38,000. I think we'll hit it in a few days. And that is an increase for page rate up to $260 a page, $650 a cover, an additional bonus for the letterer, and I think the announcement that everybody probably has been waiting for since this book was announced, that Skylar Patridge would be doing some interiors, an additional 4-page story that Natasha wrote and approach Skylar with. And if we get, if and when, I think just a when at this point, we hit 38,000, we will be confirming that'll go in the book and in the digital book as well for everyone to see. And I don't know. I think that's what, you know, we're giving the people what they want, I think, at this point.
We're so excited to have Skylar. Skylar was like one of the top artists, like on the list, like of people to reach out to, like from the very beginning. And there was always, you know, like, oh, I don't know if I've got time, or, you know, like there's these other projects that were getting announced that they were, you know, working on. And so it was such a like struggle. And there was even a couple of scripts that I wrote specifically for Skylar, and then, you know, never got, you know, didn't get to work on them. But, finally we got a four pager, and if you guys can get us to 38, then we will make it happen. And I'm so stoked about it.
And Skylar's, inevitability coming onto the project is one of the reasons I want to talk about the stretch goals, because, you know, Skylar's art is, you know, definitely one of the artists that I look to now, and I'm like, I need to like study some stuff. I need to, like, I feel most, you know, not that, you know, I certainly know I can learn some things from looking at Fel's art, that Natasha's art, and everybody's art. But yeah, Skylar is definitely one of those artists that I'm like, yeah, every time something's posted, I'm like, gotta inspect this.
I think a lot of gay women in particular also feel whenever they see Skylar's art that they need to inspect it a little bit closer.
Man, I definitely also look at her art for like a couple seconds. Like Skylar is so good at expressions. It's like you can't look away from it.
It's the eyes. And I'm like, just the line and the brushwork with the eyes and stuff like that. I'm like, I gotta figure out how that's done.
It's the woman.
And again, you know, we all have shared interests, right? But also the creator pay increases was something I definitely wanted to have mentioned, because I think it's awesome that, you know, it's so forefront as the stretch goals, because it's incredibly important. And the fact that you're so transparent with it, even, you know, it's incredibly, you're kind of like, just, you know, it's a big balls move, for lack of a better term. Like here's, look, we're telling you how much we're paying everybody, anthologies. So when you're like, oh yeah, pay rate increase. And it's like, oh, you're going to get $35 instead of 30, you know, per page or something like that.
No shade on people that I have a lower page rate, because
there's stages to this. I understand.
It's the only way to get a book made sometimes. Like I have no judgment toward people with a different pay structure than, you know, the books that I've worked on. And I mean, this is the highest page rate I've ever worked with. It makes me really happy that we're going to be able to pay people this much. Like, I like to, you know, and I know that things out there can be like paid late or underpaid and underappreciated. So it's really cool to be able to give these creators like a good page rate, so that it's something that they can, you know, feel really happy that they're making, because they're getting good money for it, and they can feel proud of what they're doing because it's cool subject matter and they're making money. And that's, yeah, you know, the bottom line, I guess. Pay your bills.
Well, yeah. From the beginning, that was like something that was really important to me, because, you know, I've worked on anthologies too, as an artist, and I'm always a little like on the fence about like how much it helped me like career wise to have done those things. Like, in some ways, yes, like, you know, more people got to see my work. I got a little bit of a paycheck, a little bit usually, but anytime, you know, like as a writer, like who has also drawn a lot of stuff and had a really bad, you know, experience breaking my hand and everything, you know, I really wanted to make sure that if I'm asking anybody to do any work for me, that I give them the best deal that I can. I want them to have enough of a project that it's worth their time. You know, most of the pages are not four, they're like at least 12 pages. And so, you know, I want it to be something that they feel like they're a true collaborator on, that they get to put their input into it and they can feel proud of what they put out. And, you know, not something they're going to have to rush. We want to give them a nice, healthy deadline and also give them enough of a paycheck that it, like, they're not having to do it on top of, like, a bunch of other things. Hopefully not, you know, a bunch of other things. I know everybody's circumstances are different, but, you know, I just, you know, want to do the best that I can as a fellow artist. I wanted to do what would feel good for me if I was getting paid for a project.
Oh, yeah. And that's incredibly thoughtful and extremely important. And my comment about the page rate thing was more so trying to be geared towards the transparency of it. Like, just, you know, and I think because you are transparent of it, people are more, you know, at least from what I've seen here, you know, from other campaigns that have kind of done this, you know, a similar thing, talking about exactly how much money is being paid out. People actually want the creators to have money. they want you to get paid. So it's, you know, kind of a switch, because I remember when Kickstarter first started coming around, like the fact that people were taking, you know, a page rate, people were getting offended that they were getting a page rate. You know, like, I thought I was just buying the book, not like, you know, like, wow, how do you think you buy the book? Like, you know, and, you know, I remember that for a long time. You know, my collaborator, Steve Bryant with Even the Helsings, you know, he was one of the first Kickstarter comics with Athena Voltaire, and he's seen it all. He's seen like the weird shift from, like, you know, doing single issue books being, you know, a huge red flag to, like, it now kind of being the, you know, a viable source of getting a series done. And then, you know, the page rate thing and all that. So, and the fact that you're an artist, you know, this is what would make the best work, because this would make me give my best work, you know, and that is an incredibly important message that needs to be sent out to people who may not be familiar. Because being as aware as we all are of this thing, there's still a lot of fans that don't know that, you know, hours can be really rough. You know, one of the most telling things that's happened to me lately is the fact that Clip Studio started recording how long you're working on a page now for automatically.
What?
Yes.
The latest update, it tells you how long you've been working on a page. I tell you,
I don't want to see that.
And ladies, I tell you, it is not pretty. It was not pretty for me. And, you know, it was all, you know, it's also something my wife's been, you know, long telling me, like, just track how long you're working on a page. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And that never happens. But now it's like, well, now my program is telling on me, you know, and I'm looking at a page right now that I've spent, you know, over 8 hours on, and it's maybe 75% done.
It's
mainly due to revisions and stuff like that, but that's another story. But I think it's that kind of stuff is important to be, you know, important to have out there for people and for people to see. So you having it up front here, you know, with everything, I think is super important. And I think, you know, I have faith in fans and you know, people in general that, you know, when you're this forthright with something, they're like, okay, cool, let's do it. You know, like, that's good.
I think that like it can be like an educational thing almost too. Yeah. Like, people that don't know how much people usually make, then maybe they'll see that and be like, is this how much people usually make? Like, you know, and anybody who's like looking at Kickstarter pages to maybe think about running their own, mm-hmm. I think it's good to sort of like lead with that transparency. Also, this was something that was so important to Natasha to be like very, very, very transparent about numbers. And I was a little hesitant at first because I feel like there's always somebody who has a problem with something that you're saying. And I was just a little hesitant, but I'm really glad that like it's printed on there in big bold letters, like as it should be, I think. And, you know, every project I make, I learn a little bit of something else. I don't know everything. And I learn a lot from the artists that I work with as somebody who's not an artist. Like, I don't, you know, everything I know about how long it takes to make a comic page is something that I have learned from the artists that I have worked with. And I try to ask a lot of questions and understand, like, you know, what's a good deadline for this many pages? What would you feel comfortable receiving with as a deadline? Like when we're working on our timelines and things, like it's important to like consult with artists. And if there's one thing that I could say to editors and writers who are collaborating with artists is to ask as many questions as possible to figure out, you know, your deadlines and your timelines and what you should be paying people. Like talk to people that have that experience, talk to the people that are doing these anthologies and receiving page rates and find out like what you're comfortable putting on your Kickstarter page that you're paying people.
Well,
and try to be proud of it best you can, at least. And I understand that not every project is going to be able to offer like a $260 page rate. It's just not a thing.
The fact is there is a project right now that is doing that. So there's,
right.
there's a precedent to start for people to start kind of like, well, maybe this one can too. Maybe this one can
it is,
too.
It is possible, but I know that it's not possible for everything, because I think it's impossible to like, not every project is, I hate calling like gay comics like a niche market. I think it's mistakenly categorized that way. It's an underserved market and people want the content and there's not a lot of it. So when books like this appear in crowdfunding, people want it, so they pay for it. There's not a lot of options. I mean, of course, I think this book is amazing. I'm really excited about it. We're funding and that's super great. I'm not saying anything negative. I'm just saying not every anthology has the capability of making enough money to pay people that much per page. And I understand I think there are just varying degrees of the money that you're capable of generating for a project. I understand that not every project can offer this much.
It's a very like unique like project too, as far as like anthologies go. Like we have a much smaller crew than a lot of anthologies, so I think that helps us to be able to offer the higher page rate. And
but the stories are also much longer.
Yeah, so it's
longer stories.
It's like a different scope, I think. You know, I think we're really clever about how we put it together so that we could, because you know, the page rate was like the thing that I was the most like insistent on, like from beginning, probably. Like once we decided to like put together a team, I was like, what can we do to make sure we can give them as much money as we can? So like it was a lot of like conversations to like finally like get to where we were at, like keeping it small, keeping the team, you know, real tight. And I mean, you know, and honestly, like we didn't know how much to offer as a page rate to begin with. So we just asked all of the artists, we're like, what do you expect for a page rate? If you were going to work on this project, what would you want? And then we just sort of picked whoever had the highest one, which was 200. That was what we went with and just offered it to everybody. Because we wanted to make sure we could get that artist at least, and you know, everybody else on board. So I like how we landed.
Yeah, because we were kind of like, let's just shoot for the stars. Like, if we're going to do this thing, let's just do the thing.
Right.
Like, why have like a regret in how you launched it? Let's just do it.
And if people weren't going to support that, then you know, I don't think that we would need to feel guilty so much as we'd be like, well, it sucks.
Right.
People don't love this as much as we do.
Right. And I think I was like pretty sure that we were going to be fine, but there's always the little, you know, the anxiety of like, what if this fails? And I don't know. We had a really great first few days. So like the fear was gone real fast, but like it was definitely there in the lead up, like coming into it with such a high goal. I consider anything over like 10 grand to be kind of a high goal.
Mm-hmm. Stuff I've worked on
has funded much higher, but I still, there's so much out there that I worry, you know, the depth of people's pockets will run out eventually. So
yeah, it definitely feels like there's, at least from my perspective, it feels like there's very small pockets to where someone can really make a run on Kickstarter with something. And then for more often than not, it seems like there's like five or six that I see mentioned a lot. or, you know, and it's doing, they're doing okay, but they're not doing the huge, you know, runaway success numbers that, you know, these odd ones here to do. So I don't want to say there's like a glut, but there's definitely way more competition than even a couple years ago. Like it feels like, especially when I see some books by people where I'm like, why isn't this funded already? You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it just has to do with, you know, it could be timing. It could be, yeah, you know, people just got done backing three or four other ones last month. And now this one comes out and it's like, well, it's how it goes. And you don't know that. You don't know when you're you have to make a plan. You have to prep it. And, you know, before we get too far past it, everything you said about building anthology, that's wonderful stuff. And again, you know, with this book serving a well put term, underserved fan base. I know that definitely contributes to all the success of all that. But I do think the fact that the book just exists and the way you're doing it is the way you're doing it. I think a lot of people are going to look at that because it is a success right now. And, you know, hopefully, you know, this community gets well served, you know, the types of books they want. And the stories.
So many jokes about serving the community on the tip of my tongue. I'm just like, I want to leave it alone, but I feel like I can't.
Meanwhile, I don't know. I'm like, I'm setting the show up here, and she's just leaving me hanging. I'm just lobbing.
I can't do it.
I'm just lobbing easy ones at her, and
we're giving the gays what they want. We're doing the best we can.
But yeah,
anything in service to my community.
And I just think that, you know, just as a successful book alone on Kickstarter, a lot of people are going to look at what did you all do and how can we do this to attribute to ours? Because there's a lot of, you know, I've certainly listened to my fair share of like Kickstarter analysts and people who like, you know, write, you know, articles and podcasts, endless things on how to do a Kickstarter, what to do and all these groups and things like that. I assure you, this book is being looked at by those people and dissected. The campaign is being dissected. Like what can you do that this book did? So I think you're going to, you know, you may not see a direct influence of it, but it's definitely going to be there. And I think that's great because everything you're doing is positive. I think it's a great thing for Kickstarter comics in general. So, you know, not that this book isn't enough. It's not, there's not enough things happening. It's not even over yet. But I always have the evil compulsion to ask, you know, what's next? You know, what other kind of, because, you know, you're all creative people. You always have five or six things in the back of your head, minimum, that you're kind of working on in whatever bubbles first. So is there anything you want to kind of mention that's you're working on in the future or anything like that? And if you don't want to, I completely understand too, you know. Having laser focus is perfectly acceptable for this type of thing. But knowing myself, there's always like the thing after the thing that takes up a decent amount of brain space as well.
Well, I can go first. I'm currently working on a graphic novel called Wildflowers. It's going to be published from Literati Press out of Oklahoma City. They're the original Heathen publishers, so I'm kind of going back to my roots a little bit. It is set in Oklahoma, and we haven't done like an official like announcement yet because it's so far like it's 460 pages because I just could not keep the script under control, and they were like, you should add a little bit here and there, and we're like, okay. So I've penciled about 109 pages so far of 460. So that's about where I'm at. So look for that in a couple of years. It's a queer romance also. I should mention that.
2097,
Wildflowers. We're patient. We'll wait for it.
It's cute. I love it.
Awesome. How about you, Phil?
Honestly, the next thing on my plate is just drawing Sapphic Pulse. Like, I'm really, really looking forward to drawing, the story that Natasha wrote for me. I think it's super cute. It's a lot of fun. It has a lot of stuff I like drawing, like Kei Yuni got abs. I think I like tweeted back in like 2018, oh, I love Heathen. I wish I could work with Natasha, and now I am. So it's like, things come true.
I'm awesome. Such a huge fan, Phil. Thank you again for being on the project. And this is, I just wanted to, like, you know, give everybody a little preview. Like, Phil's is the one story in the collection that's like a silent comic, so there's no dialogue at all. And it's incredibly like steamy, and there's such a like build up to it. And Phil's gonna knock it out of the park. I'm so excited.
Thank you. I can't wait to buy it.
Michelle?
I'm not really sure. Honestly, I've got a lot of stuff that like I want to work on. I have a few things I'm working on pitches for. But I mean, just this right now, I'm really focused on, I mean, Swat Cow, like Sharpwit and the Company of Women, the last anthology that I did is about to begin fulfillment. Like, we're just now shipping copies to backers. Have a boxes and boxes of them in my hallway. We're taking them to FlameCon this weekend. By the time this interview comes out, FlameCon will have already happened, and hopefully I've sold all of them, fingers crossed. But I'm just wrapping up conventioning and hoping to tighten up a couple of pitches, find some people to work with. I usually just kind of like let life take me where it takes me in terms of the comics that I'm working on. And stuff, the cool stuff seems to find me. We find each other. So looking, I guess I don't know if I'm necessarily looking for my next big gay thing, because I mean, anthologies are really tiring, and Swat Cow started 2 days after Color of Always finished. Ooh. So I'm probably not diving into another anthology through Extra Pages Press, not right away. We are not planning on launching another one this year. So it's really just like trying to do some personal projects probably for the rest of the year, and looking forward to it, I think. I am editing a book called Kill My Boyfriend, that's coming to Kickstarter. I think that comes out like next week. There's no breaks. Really excited for that one. I haven't done much on that yet, because all that's been written really is, you know, there's some preview pages. They look fantastic. Tench, who was my artist in Color of Always and in Swat Cow, she's amazing, and she's doing the interiors for Kill My Boyfriend. My friend Anas, they are writing it. An incredible writer. I love the creative team on this book. I'm really excited to dive into it. Fingers crossed that campaign is successful. I'm sure it will be. It's such a good looking book. The art looks amazing. The story is really smart. It's really funny. So I've got that coming up. I'm excited for that one too. I'm not running that campaign. I'm just editing it during the creation process. And that's going to be, single issues, basically. Like you said, Don, like that's the way to go these days, to launch a series. And I think that's going to be a really fun one. So while Sapphic Pulp is like kind of in production, there's going to be a bit of a push for that one to get moving a little bit also. So, but other than that, just some personal stuff that I'm going to, try to focus on some writing, and hope for the best.
Awesome. I love how you said, not much. And then you listed a whole bunch of stuff. And
well,
I'm happy that you're going to be doing some personal stuff and getting that stuff out there, because you have been in the grind of the anthology and the Kickstarters and all that stuff and doing a fantastic job. And you know, you deserve to have a reap a bit from.
I mean,
from,
do from, I? From do I really? I really don't know.
Well, none of us do, but you do. But you have to. You have to take those. You have to fulfill the personal bank fulfillment. I guess I don't know what the hell I'm saying right now. you got to recharge yourself with projects that, you know, you can take a bit more of a personal stake in, you know?
Yeah. I think it's important to just like remember why you make stuff occasionally. Yeah. And sometimes, like, you know, I love helping people tell stories and encouraging them to make the things they want to make. And I think like we should also do that for ourselves. Even if it doesn't turn into anything, I think it's important to just remember that I like making stuff also.
For sure.
100%. I mean, that's what I strive for myself. You know, I definitely do things that are.
And you and I need to talk.
Yes. Yes. Cause I really want to do, I really want to do that story. And, you know, yeah. I have some other stories that I eventually want to do, some like more bigger one shot things that, you know, I need other perspectives on. I need other, you know, guided hands on. You know.
And here I am, like, well, you should talk to me about it. I'll encourage you to, you know, make the right choices, and we'll get the stuff that you want to get made. We'll get it made.
Yeah. So once my juggling of two different books.
See, yeah, hit me up, man.
Hopefully, levels out at some point. I don't know when, but yeah, it's. I was hoping to actually be talking to you this month. About it, but lots of things got delayed, and now I'm stuck trying to pull up the slack on that on my end. So, yeah, you know, we'll get to it.
It'll happen when it happens, and it'll be great when it does.
In no small part to your involvement, for sure. Natasha, Fel, Michelle, thank you so much for coming on. I really had a blast talking to you all. You know, Sapphic Pulp, there'll be links down below and the show notes for you to go check it out, along with links to all your social medias. But I also make you say your social media for some sadistic reason as well. So let's just do that again. Starting with Fel, can you let everybody know where they can find you online?
Yeah, I am everywhere. I'm on every single app. So you can find me on Twitter at fel_. I am on Instagram at fel.pound. I'm on Tumblr at fel-pound. I'm on Blue Sky at fel-pound. Just search the name. Or you can just go on my website, felhoundart.com, and sign up for my new beautiful newsletter that I am about to launch. That's probably the best way to keep in touch. But I'm on everything. Search felhound on Google and you will find me everywhere, or you will find a random character from Raid Shadow Legends.
Natasha?
I'm Natasha Alterisi, pretty much everywhere. Alterici. It's a hard one. I'm not everywhere. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and Blue Sky. And I'm usually the only Natasha Alterisi. There's also Nicole Alterisi, but that's my wife, so don't follow them. Unless, you know, you want pictures of cats.
That's the internet, right?
Yeah. That's all we want. We want gay comics and cats. That's it.
All right. Michelle?
I am on Twitter, Cereal Pancake, the breakfast foods. Also Blue Sky, Cereal Pancake. I don't know. Where the hell else am I? Instagram. I like pancakes. It's really not that deep. I just like breakfast.
Stay tuned for the next couple of years. I'm going to force Michelle and probably Brent to do like a breakfast food podcast with me. And we're just going to like try different breakfast foods and talk about them.
Right.
I mean, like, I'm down. but yeah, I'm predominantly, I don't know. I haven't been as chained to social media as much lately. But Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram is more, I don't know, posting pictures of beverages in my stories and less comics promo, but, and pictures of dogs that I see that are cute. Mainly just, Twitter and Blue Sky, hopefully less Twitter as the future rolls on.
All right. Awesome. And, I can't let it be unsaid that, public thank you to Fel for sharing the invite to Blue Sky for me to be on there, because it is so much nicer over there. And even though I'm like, I need to quit social media, it feels like my social media has been like there's too many. Like I had too many with just Twitter and like Instagram, and now there's also Threads, which I don't know if I'm trying to use that or not. And then it was because I did the dummy thing where I'm like, all right, fine, I'll try it out. And then like literally like an hour later, everyone's like, don't do it because you can't delete it. And then I'm like, you know, so I'm like, well, I'm already here. Maybe I should try.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then Blue Sky, you know, I literally put shortcuts on my phone. I changed it. So I don't have X and Blue Sky on my phone. I have good Twitter and bad Twitter.
Icons on there. Nice.
And so, you know, the nice thing is since I did it as shortcuts, I don't see the notifications, like the numbers come off the notifications. So that does a lot for my anxiety.
I turned those off years ago. Yeah. No red dots on my phone.
if I don't overcomplicate things for myself, it's not worth doing. But Blue Sky is very nice. Thank you, Fel, for sending the invite to me. And yeah, if y'all can make it over there, you know, Michelle, Natasha, and Fel are all great people to follow on social media. You forgot to mention the Kirby memes, Michelle, but that's okay.
I also do repost a lot of Kirby memes on every available social media platform.
And I say that as someone who constantly tags you on a whole bunch of them too. So, you know,
I love it. I love Kirby. I absolutely adore my son. It's fine.
All right. Well, everybody, go check out Sapphic Pulp, but go follow these amazing creators. And ladies, thanks again. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Don. Always a pleasure. I'll see you in a couple weeks, probably, right? On another episode.
Get better. All right.